This is KERA News. Since 1992, Ed Krause has been a Fort Worth cop. In May, he was named interim police chief. Last month, he got the job permanently. KERA's Christopher Connolly sat down with Chief Krause to talk about leading the force he's been part of for nearly three decades, starting with his top priorities for Fort Worth PD.
Chief Krause, thank you for taking the time, and congratulations on the relatively new job.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to sit down with you.
In terms of your priorities, what are your top two priorities? Give me two things that you think have to be at the top when it comes to this department moving forward, policing this growing city.
Okay, so number one is a return to community policing. That's the model I grew up under. There was a movement away from that, not just in the Fort Worth Police Department, but across the profession nationally. And that followed the events of 9/11. That caused a lot of departments to move away, quit putting resources toward community policing and put them in other places to deal with the perceived threat of terrorism.
And when you say community policing, you're talking about officers, you know, on foot patrol and in the same area, policing the same area regularly?
Yes, so the citizens get to know their officers. Right now, we have neighborhood police officers. Every beat has a neighborhood police officer assigned to them. It's something Thomas Windham started back in the early 90s. We finally got to the point where every beat had a police officer, and that is a beat-wide problem solver. So they take care of the broken windows on the beat, the spotlight or the streetlights that are out, the alleys that need cleaning, and they put the needs in touch with the services that provide those fixes. That is something we maintained since Thomas Windham put it in place. However, the beat officers, we went away from a beat concept, which had the, you know, you'd work a beat when you come in every day, you know you're gonna, that's your beat, you're gonna work that area. We did away with that and went to a zone concept. What that did is instead of working one particular beat, you're one of eight officers working eight beats. And so you could be moved from one side of the division to the other. You don't have time to sit down and know the people that you're serving at that point. So this return to a beat concept is something we started earlier or back in 2019. Although it's a priority, it's actually a part of a larger priority, which is a return to community policing.
So that's one priority. Is there a second that's up at the top there?
I think that has to be the main focus, is to bring that trust and that relationship back to the department. Once we get there, other things will fall into place. I would say the second priority would just be this continuation toward transparency in the department. And again, that will feed into community policing if we can increase that legitimacy with the police department, with the community that we serve. And I'll tell you, most of Fort Worth community is very supportive of the police department. There are some groups that there's distrust, and that's where we need to concentrate our efforts to build that trust with them.
Leadership, of course, means you're in charge in the good times and in the difficult times. One of the most difficult in recent memory is after the shooting of a Tatiana Jefferson, a 28-year-old, by a Fort Worth police officer. You were quick to condemn the shooting. Officer Aaron Dean resigned, and he's now indicted for murder. Now, I know you can't talk about the details of the case. There's a gag order from the judge, but I'm wondering what that moment and what that experience taught you, and if you see room for change or things that need to be priorities moving forward.
Well, yeah, so you're right. There's not much I can say as far as details of the shooting because of the gag order. I will say that incident was a very profound incident on me, and I think when I end my career in law enforcement, it will be one of the biggest, most profound instances that are incidents that that made up my career. What I found through that, and something we'd started earlier in the summer with some of the other officer-involved incidents we'd had, was a need to be more responsive to the community, to recognize their need to know, and balance that with the need to preserve details for an investigation and find a way to be quicker to release details, video or pictures when available, to help build that relationship with the community, help create transparency with the department so people feel better about their department even when something negative happens.
So they can sort of trust in the process a little bit more.
If they trust in the process, it gives the police department legitimacy in the community, and that makes it easier for us to do our jobs.
You're leading a department at a time where there's a lot that's happening. You have those tensions that were exposed in the Tatiana Jefferson shooting. You have some legal mess still from the former chief who was let go by the city. You have a panel of national experts coming in to evaluate training policies and procedures. You have a city government that's going to set up new police oversight authorities. With all of that going on, I guess, do you worry that'll impede your ability to kind of get the work done that you want to get done?
No, I don't think so. I think those are actually great opportunities for us. The panel is reviewing our policies and procedures and training. That we always need to be looking for how can we improve? How can we do better? I think when you lock yourself into a position that, hey, we're doing pretty good, we don't need outside feedback or input, then you're setting yourself up for failure. You can't see everything from inside an organization. You need people from outside the organization to help you move that organization forward. So I'm not concerned about that. As far as the police oversight, I think that can only help make us better. I'm not opposed to that. I'm not worried about that or afraid of that. I'm curious how we're going to get that set up, what the exact format will look like, but I'm more than happy to work with the individual that gets that auditor-monitor position to help build a model that works for Fort Worth.
Do you worry about morale for rank-and-file officers, seeing some form of citizen review board or police oversight, civilian oversight coming into effect, that's going to somehow hurt morale or that officers are going to be kind of nervous about, do I need to be more cautious? Do I need to be more calculating when I'm out in the field making these quick decisions?
Right. So the one thing we don't want to do is put that hesitation in an officer's mindset to the point that it's going to cause them a delay that gets them hurt or gets somebody else hurt. We do very well with training our officers in use of force situations. We need to do a better job of training them how to keep their job and doing so by using force in a responsible manner when necessary and to the least amount necessary. I do think that there is trepidation among a lot of officers about what will this oversight look like, what will this mean for me as I go through my career. But it's just the unknown right now that's causing that angst. I think once we get a model in place and they see how it's playing out and that, they're not being thrown to the wolves, they're going to be supported, but they're also going to be expected to do things the right way. I think they'll relax because most of the officers are already doing that.
And most large cities have these, some sort of oversight mechanism like this.
Yes, most large cities have something in place.
I want to talk to you a little bit about recruiting and training. You used to oversee the training division, right?
Yes.
The training academy.
Correct.
One of the things you talk about is having servant-hearted officers. That's the focus, kind of moving past this warrior mentality that's remained pretty pervasive in policing. And I guess I'm just wondering, on a basic recruitment level, how do you search for those qualities? How do you screen for those tendencies in the recruitment process?
I think that it comes down to emotional intelligence, and you have to find some kind of metric to measure that. And I don't think that we have that yet. I don't think that most departments have that. That's why you do so much background check on the people, the applicants that are coming in. You reach out to not only people they tell you about, but every time you talk to them, you say, who else can I talk to about them? And you're trying to find that picture of who that individual is. The warrior mindset is something that is sometimes instilled through the training because we do teach them all about the use of force, how to protect themselves and how to protect the public. And do so effectively. That's easy. It's training the tactics of the job. And so I think sometimes that builds into that warrior mindset. We just have to have more empathy with the people that we police to build that servant component. And one of the things we've started doing with the academy class we have in session now is bringing people from the community that have had negative experiences with the police at some point in their life to talk to the recruits about how that impacted them, how that impacted their families, whether they got sent to jail, whether it was in their opinion, a bad use of force. So our officers, recruits, can see how the actions they take will impact others. And then we're also bringing community members into some of our scenario-based training so they can be role players as these recruits go through the academy. That gives the community members an idea of what's involved, as well as the recruits, in getting experience dealing with a diverse group of people that they're going to be out there serving in a few months.
So in a way, you're trying to sort of train empathy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Former Officer Dean, in his job interview, said that he wanted to join the Fort Worth PD partly for public service, but also for the action and adventure in the job. And again, I know there's the gag order, you can't talk about him specifically, but I'm wondering if those are sort of sentiments that should be warning signs in the recruitment process.
I would say not necessarily. I think, you know, policing is out there on all sorts of fictional TV shows as well as more reality-based TV shows. And you see some of that action. And I think that is a draw toward policing. But the emphasis needs to be that we're doing that stuff in service to the community. And just because you have to chase someone down or go physically grab hold of them or use force, that's not the goal. It's a means to the goal, which is to serve the community by taking a criminal off the street, somebody that's negatively impacting other members of the community through crime or assault or theft or something like that. So I think that the excitement of the job is something that will always be a draw. But what people need to realize, that excitement comes once in a blue moon. I mean, you'll go to 10, 12, 20 calls, and there's simply an opportunity to connect people with services or to document an offense through a report. And it's only once in a great while that you actually are chasing someone down or having to physically try to control someone.
We've done some reporting at KERA on the challenges of recruiting a more diverse police force, recruiting more officers of color, recruiting more women to departments. I'm just wondering if you have ideas for how the process in Fort Worth can be, or whether it should be changed to have a department that looks a little bit more like the city that it polices.
Yeah, so that is the pervasive thought throughout law enforcement, not just in Fort Worth, nationally. Let's get a workforce that reflects the demographics that we're serving. That is the goal. It is difficult to do. A lot of the times that the demographics you're trying to recruit are from the portion of society that least trusts the police department. So again, it goes back to that building legitimacy of the police department and that trust between the community and the police department to get individuals from certain groups to actually want to become police officers. And we see strides in some ways. Police explorer type programs that offered by some high schools, that's a good avenue to get people in here. As part of the Race and Culture Task Force, one of the recommendations was the development of a cadet program, and that's something that we are putting together now. I think we had close to 200 applicants for 20 positions, so we're trying to get those 20 people narrowed down and give them that experience in the police department, not just as an avenue for them to get hired on, but for them to be the spokesperson for the police department as they go out in the community and say, hey, look, this is what I've learned in my 2 years as a police cadet, and try to get others recruited through that way.
Right. So there's sort of a ripple out from each individual.
Is certainly what we're hoping to achieve, yes.
This is a wonky thing, but it's one that is a hot question from activists of, you know, whether or not the civil service code is a barrier to accountability in the police department. And I'm curious what your thoughts are. I mean, the argument is that essentially it makes it harder to hold bad actors accountable. It makes their records harder to track when you have police officers who are misbehaving, because you can request less information about that. And it somewhat ties your hands as the chief in what you're able to do in terms of disciplinary action. I'm wondering if repealing the civil service code or pulling out of the civil service code is something that you think Fort Worth should do.
Well, as you look at that, you need to be careful, because you need to go back and say, why was this implemented in the first place? And the reason it was to get rid of a good old boy network that was in place where the chief gets to hire whoever he wants to hire, and there's no provision for equality, there's no provision for fairness. It's simply, who does that chief want to hire? And then the next chief gets to do whatever that chief wants to do. So it was put into place to create an equal playing field for people that want to be police officers. And so before you start talking, before anyone starts talking about repealing it, you need to see, what are we going to put in place to make sure that we don't go backwards when we do this? As far as access to records and that sort of thing, so the legislators decided this was something that they wanted to do to protect police officers that are out there trying to do their job, so that they are not second, third, and fourth guessed by members of the community, that they are set and adhered to certain codes of conduct and practices that maintain how they will do their jobs, but that they don't want them to be detrimentally harmed for doing those jobs. So I think there's opportunity to create or to look at different ways to make the system better, maybe without repealing the law, but it's certainly something you don't want to do without looking at different options.
And changes to that would have to be done at the legislature, right?
That is not something we do here. We do have certain local rules that we can look at through the local civil service commission, but state civil service law is done through the state legislature.
When it comes to immigration, there was a lot of talk starting a couple years ago with Trump coming into office, with the passage of SB 4 in Texas, the so-called ban on sanctuary cities, that stepped up immigration enforcement on the federal level, this state law, that all of that would come together and make immigrants less likely to talk to local law enforcement, to report crimes, to offer tips in an investigation. And I'm wondering, you know, we're now a couple years in, do you feel like this has been an issue?
It's hard to measure what's not being reported.
Well, I guess, let me ask you, do you worry about what you don't know that you don't know?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's why you saw us as a police department go before city council and say, we think SB 4 is a bad thing, that it could cause people to report less to the police because they fear that they will be deported or their immigration status will be checked. And we as a department put policies in place or procedures in place, so when officers are, if they request an immigration check, that we can at least track that. That we understand we don't want our officers working, devoting their time to that when we have so many other pressing issues in Fort Worth. We'd rather them be out there proactively patrolling, meeting with the community, and addressing crime instead of immigration checks. What we found is, because we track when that happens, we've had very few in the past few years, I think within less than 10, where we have actually had officers that are pursuing that. I think most of that probably occurs after an arrest is made to determine if this is a criminal alien or if this is not a criminal alien. But that is done through the jail systems.
There's been a lot of praise recently for the armed volunteer security team at West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, the ones that took down a shooter who interrupted the service and began firing. As a chief of police, I'm wondering if that to you feels like a good setup, if there's sort of some concern that, you know, when your officers show up, that it may be hard for them to tell the good guy with the gun from the bad guy with the gun. Or if you think this is sort of, you know, the best solution to an imperfect situation, which is that it takes time to respond to any shooting, and a lot happens in the first few seconds.
Well, I think I have nothing but praise for that security team and the work they did there. Pastor Farmer decided that was something they were going to do, and I certainly respect that decision. He put something in place, and those people responded in such a manner that they saved several lives. That individual was not going to stop with shooting two people. He only shot two people because another security team member stopped him from shooting anyone else. I don't have any problem with that. There, undoubtedly, if that type of model were to spread, there's undoubtedly going to be a time where there's confusion that may lead to friendly fire when first responders show up. However, the average response time to an active shooter is about 3 minutes. So if they take someone down, more than likely someone's going to greet those first responders at the door, and things will have calmed down a little bit. I think the need for an immediate responder, a citizen responder, outweighs the potential threat of something such as a friendly fire incident happening.
So it's a matter of sort of weighing the two risks.
Absolutely. There's going to be risk anytime you deal with some type of a security team like that.
Have you had faith leaders reach out to you and say, maybe this is something we need to explore? What do you think?
Yes, but not just necessarily in response to this latest shooting. After the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting, we had our officers reach out to every house of worship in the city of Fort Worth so we could create a list of where those houses of worship are, who the contact person is, what's a good contact number, and then also offer them what we call it, CRACE, civilian response to active shooter encounters, training for them and their congregation. Several churches have taken us up on that. We've done several trainings with our reality-based training unit, so they understand what they need to do when an active shooter happens. It's something that I think all houses of worship should be looking at. I think that what we saw at the West Freeway Church of Christ is a good, valid model that others will be copying because it provides your immediate response. I think the probably another model would be when you have people out there engaging individuals as they walk into a house of worship, actually stopping and talking to them. And then behind that, as a second layer, you have a uniformed officer or deputy like that that you can immediately reach out to that's on premise if you see something that's not right.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that security team, I mean, we're talking about people who are pretty well trained, right? The guy who actually
absolutely
took again, the guy down was
again. That's why I said
it's not just a random guy with a gun.
Not just citizens with guns that haven't gotten any training. They put a system in place where those volunteers that agreed to be part of this team went through a large amount of training so that they were prepared. So I think that training component needs to be there just to ensure that there is some level of professionalism involved in the security team.
You made the news in a way that police chiefs of big police departments don't usually. Fairly recently, by chasing down a suspected hit-and-run driver and arresting him, hopping over two fences in the process. But you say that you like to go out on patrol, that's something that you do a fair amount. I mean, why is it important to have the chief out on patrol and not, you know, I don't know, here in meetings and doing all the other stuff a police chief has to do?
Well, we talked earlier about legitimacy between the community and the police department, but there has to be legitimacy between the officers that do the work and the command staff that oversees their work. They have to know that the command staff is willing to go out there in the trenches with them, do the same thing we're asking them to do, and that we're willing to accept some of the risks that we're asking them to assume. I love going out on patrol. It's just there's not as much time to do it as I would like. You actually have to schedule time to do that. Otherwise, something will always interfere with it.
Ed Krause is the chief of police for the city of Fort Worth. Chief Krause, thanks.
Thank you.